Good morning and welcome to our Q2 Employee Forum broadcast here in Europe. I'm Gordon Moultrie. I'm Director of Communications for Digital in Europe. And I'm delighted to be able to host this first ever worldwide employee forum broadcast from Geneva here in Switzerland. Geneva has been the home of Digital's European headquarters for more than 20 years. It's also the home of headquarters for some of our customers and indeed some of our competitors. The city itself has a long and very rich history. Today, it's the home of the United Nations in Europe. It's also the site of the GATT talks on world trade. And as such, it's played host to many of the world's leaders and indeed diplomats. Today, it plays host to another very important world leader, Digital President and Chief Executive Officer Bob Palmer. Bob is in the midst of a week-long series of meetings with customers, journalists and employees across Europe. And I'm very pleased to be able, on behalf of all European employees, to welcome Bob to our employee forum here in Geneva today. Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Palmer.
Thank you, Gordon. Thank you. Thank you very much. As Gordon mentioned, this is a particularly special DVM because it's the first one that we've hosted in Europe, but it's also quite special to me because, as you think about it, it's been just 1 year ago that I was privileged to be chosen to be the new Chief Executive Officer of Digital. And what I thought we would do this morning is talk about what's happened during that last year and what the outlook is for our company going forward. I wanted to take this opportunity to thank all of our employees worldwide for your hard work during the last 13 months. We've accomplished a great deal by working together. And it's rather remarkable, you know, in a year's time you forget how it was just a year ago, but I remember it quite well. Many analysts were writing about our company and questioning the very viability of the company. And unfortunately, even some customers were questioning our viability. We had lost over a 3-year and 1/4 period of time, $3.9 billion, which is a huge sum of money for any company. They're not asking that today. In less than a year's time, analysts have gained confidence in digital. Our customers are gaining confidence in digital. People see that we are turning the company around, and they're quite optimistic, as I am. I had hoped that we would remain profitable in Q1. As you know, we didn't get the revenue that we needed. We missed our revenue plan. We slid back into the red a little bit, but not much. And on a year-over-year basis, as you'll see in a moment, we greatly reduced our losses. So I'm very optimistic despite those Q1 results. These DVNs are quite important to me. In fact, getting out and talking with all our employees is very important. It's an opportunity for me to listen to you and see what's on your mind, answer your questions, but also for me to give you some very succinct messages that you can take away and share with other employees. I'm discouraged somewhat to see that only about 30% of the employees that could watch the DVN, so I make one every quarter to let you know how things are going, only about 30% actually watch these things. So I think I need to bring in a little more attendance if possible, get people more communicating so that I know what's on your mind, you know what's on my mind, and we have an opportunity then to share different points of view. So please try to come to these things, encourage your colleagues to come, talk about what you see in the DVNs or questions you might have. Send me some electronic mail messages if in fact you want to be sure that I get your points, because we do listen to these things. It's a very useful thing to have a network like Digital's. Many of you may know that about 2 weeks ago we made this ill-thought-out adventure that we decided we would cancel our tuition reimbursement program, at least until perhaps the start of the next fiscal year, because we wanted to conserve cash. We said, well, maybe we'll do that. And we tried that. Got lots of feedback from a lot of different employees in the company that said they didn't think that was a very good idea. And within 2 days, we changed our direction, reinstated the tuition reimbursement program, made a few changes, putting the responsibility directly in the manager's hands, but fundamentally responded to employee feedback. So communications is a two-way thing. It's very important, and it's particularly important when a company is involved in a turnaround of the magnitude that we're involved in, so everybody understands what's going on. And one of the things we have as you probably know, is an extensive notes file. And you can look in there and see what's on employees' minds. And I saw that last year when the board of directors increased my salary, that there was a lot of information in there. People were saying, well, why does this guy make that much money? And I thought that rather than ask somebody to, or wait until somebody might ask that question, I'll just answer that question up front so you'd know how that feels. I think we have a slide here that talks about compensation. I hope you can see it in the computer industry for last year. And what this slide shows, just the data, it's publicly available data, and it shows the compensation of a number of chief executive officers. It starts with the highest, which in this case is Eckerd Pfeiffer at Compaq. And you can see that in cash compensation, this doesn't have anything to do with options, just cash compensation, Eckerd here made $2.8 million. Jim Unruh here at Unisys at $1.8 million. Hewlett Packard was John Young at 1.6. John Scully at Apple at 1650. John Akers at IBM at 1.3. Way over here, we have Bob Palmer at $738,000. It's interesting to me when you look at the data, it doesn't look as outrageous, although it's a handsome sum of money, I admit that. Now it happens that just recently the board hired an external compensation specialist to look at all of the salaries of the senior leadership team. And we have a compensation committee of the board of directors. I'm not on it. They independently look at and see, are we paying a competitive rate for all of our vice presidents and top level management? And of course, it's my responsibility to ensure that we're paying a competitive rate for all employees in the various markets that we do business. And the compensation specialist recommended that they adjust my salary to at least maybe within 10% of what Ken made during his last year as a president of this enterprise. And so that was done. And there, I hope that helps with some explanation. It's interesting to me, by the way, looking at these salaries, Apple Computer here at more than twice this number, they only have 14,000 employees in the whole company. The relative complexity of these enterprises is not really comparable. But anyway, I'm quite pleased with my own remuneration, and I hope you are. We intend to pay in digital competitive for performance. So the issue is to make sure that all employees are well remunerated and we are competitive with our external competition. Now, in terms of returning to profitability, I talked about how the company had been in trouble. I mentioned a year ago when I first talked to employees and talked to analysts that it took quite some time for the company to get in trouble. We'd actually begin to slide in terms of operating earnings as far back as 1987, fiscal 87. You didn't really see any serious losses until fiscal 90, but by then the losses were happening very rapidly. If you look at this graph, it shows that the sales were gradually increasing during that period of time from FY88, but the earnings were steadily coming down and then, of course, just plummeting in FY92. I'm happy to say that at this point was when the transition was made to new management, and you can see a very sharp reversal in our earnings per share. And as I mentioned, just the first quarter just now, we slipped back. You'll notice the periodicity of this thing. It continues to have that shape. That's something we need to work on in terms of our metrics for our sales force and compensation so that we can take some of that dramatic periodicity out of our pattern. I looked at our competitors' patterns, and although they have some periodicity in theirs, depending on when their fiscal years end, it's not nearly as pronounced as in digital. So that tells me that this has to do with the way that we metric and pay sales professionals, and so we need to work on that. But in any event, you can see we very sharply have turned the company around. Now, as a matter of fact, if you look at the operating earnings and you forget about all of the restructuring, just because you know we took a bunch of charges for restructuring, but forget about all that and just look at operating earnings in the last four quarters that new management has been leading the company versus the previous four quarters. That's what this chart shows. And so you see that this is when management change was made, and you see that that was Q2 of last year. This is the new management versus the year ago quarter. And likewise, as you go on through the years, you see that we steadily improved our results, slipped back a little, but relative to this $260 million loss that we had a year ago, the $97 million loss, not so bad. And as a matter of fact, these last two combined together are still in the black. So it says that we have sharply reduced our losses. How much? Well, it's a factor of more than 12. In 1 year's time, reduced the losses by a factor of more than 12. To be specific, in the four quarters previous to the change in management, the company lost $915 million. In the four quarters since, we lost $75 million, a difference of $840 million. That's a lot of difference, huge difference. And quite, you can see why analysts were concerned about our future. If we had kept losing money at the rate we were losing money, quite clearly the enterprise would have been at risk. Now also during that time, if you think about the things that we've accomplished in the year's time, certainly we've got our costs in line, we've got the business turned around a bit. Revenue hasn't grown yet. In fact, revenue during this period of time was flat. I think it was only 1% growth. But we did achieve quite remarkable double-digit growth in our PCs, double-digit growth in our new Unix workstations, and we introduced the world's highest performance architecture, the Alpha AXP architecture. Now, that architecture has set price performance standards throughout the industry. So just think about in a year's time how much change that digital has managed as we go forward. Margins are under a lot of pressure, as I think everyone in here knows. We have a number of factors going on there. In the first quarter, for example, we didn't have the volume we needed. That increased your cost of goods, and so that puts pressure. We have a shift in mix from the high end of our product line to more desktop appliances, which have lower costs and more aggressive, lower prices and more aggressive pricing in the marketplace. And so you have factors that are going to continue to put pressure on margins. And what management has to do is make sure that we work on our cost side to get the costs out of our products so we nonetheless are profitable. The other thing that is quite clear is we've changed our whole pricing philosophy. The pricing philosophy used to be that when we got in trouble, we raised our prices. And as a result, frankly, you get over time, you lose your customer base, you have smaller and smaller market share, and that's just the wrong strategy. The strategy that we have today that we started last year is we bring out the highest performance products, price them very aggressively, so we are the price performance leader. Today in workstations, for example, we are the price performance leader in every price band, in every geography, against all competitors. And in some cases, we are the number one leader. In one case in particular, Australia achieved number one market share with digital workstations, same products that we don't have number one market share in other territories. So it shows what can be done by really focused sales and a lot of marketing effort, a lot of hard work. We're number one ahead of Hewlett Packard, Sun Microsystems, what have you. So that's a very good point also, an accomplishment in that period of time. Now, as you know, here in Europe, the economy has been quite poor for an extended period of time, and I personally do not see any immediate improvement. It just seems like it's going to muddle along for a while. Also in the U.S., it's not been very robust. We've had 1.5 to 2% kind of growth in our GDP. Not a really favorable environment for growth, and yet our market share is quite small in both of the geographies. We ought to be gaining market share with these products and services. We need more emphasis on how to sell, more sales training. In Asia, we're doing double-digit growth, and in particular in Japan, we're doing very well. You know, Japan had a year-over-year growth in excess of 20%. New management in Japan, more focus, and we're doing much better. This same kind of management focus has to be spread throughout our organization. I think that fundamentally for the year, as we look forward now, this fiscal 94, most analysts are expecting digital to remain in the black, never mind the first quarter, which is always our weakest quarter, to get in the black, and somewhere the ones I've read recently between kind of break even and about $1.50 earnings per share for the year. I don't make forecasts. It's nonsense, really. You have no idea how much you'll be able to sell during a year. We have a plan, but you don't know in advance that you'll achieve it. We don't know about our cost side, really, but I think that the analysts have been accurate so far. And you say, so somewhere between $0 and $1.50 is reasonable. If we work hard, we should be able to do something near the top end of that range. So anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about getting competitive and what we need to do about that. In terms of the progress that we've made there, you know that we've been re-engineering the company. It's a complete transformation of the company, bottom to top. We've slashed our engineering spending on a year-over-year basis. This last quarter, engineering was down 22%. I mentioned last evening to some employees here that we had reduced our engineering spending on an annual basis by more than $300 million. We canceled virtually no products. There was one product that I can recall that was a very modest investment in terms of the total engineering budget, a couple of very small software issues. We took $300 million out by just rationalizing our organization, eliminating internal conflict and redundancy, getting more focused on what it is we're trying to accomplish. That was a very important role that was led by Bill Strecker, the Chief Technology Officer of the company. In the sales, general, and administrative areas, we reduced that on a year-over-year basis by 23%. You know, for the quarter, that was $259 million year-over-year came out. So very, very dramatic. If you think about in the restructuring, in just the last year, this company has reduced its ongoing costs by more than $1 billion. So we're rapidly approaching what's necessary to be competitive. Another accomplishment from a year ago is that fundamentally we developed a strategy. The company had not had a strategy. We had been trying to do everything for everyone, everywhere, all the time. So we had a strategy that said, we'll do everything. That spreads your resources so thin that you don't do very many things well. This year, a year ago when I took this job, I was quite clear in the first speech that we're going to focus on some things, we're going to become customer focused, and we're going to develop a strategy that makes sense for our company. You do that by looking at what are the core competencies that the company has. And in looking at those core competencies, how could you drive those to some leadership position in the marketplace? And we established the objective that you see on the screen here, hopefully, that talks about leadership. That means number one, in excellence, be the best, in open client-server computing that delivers real customer solutions. You've got to add value to the customer. Every word in here is important. Open, that means you can't hide behind proprietary barriers. You've got to meet all of the standards. We offer our customers more choice than any of our competitors. We support three popular operating systems. We meet all of the interface standards. It's a completely different strategy than we had in the past. And it's very focused. Now, when I have a strategy, I noticed one of our competitors, Lee Gerstner at IBM, was saying that he didn't need a strategy. I can't imagine how you can say that, because in the absence of a strategy, how do you know when you look at each investment proposal whether or not it's something to be supported? Like in my job function, I see investment proposals all the time. And many are quite good, most are well thought out, but the issue is, if you don't know what you're trying to accomplish, how do you sort among the different proposals which ones you're going to do, which ones not? If you have a strategy statement like the one on the screen there, you know that you're going to invest your engineering investment in those things that will support this objective: leadership, open, client server, which is a distributed computing technology, an evolution really of what digital equipment's been about for more than 30 years, that delivers real solutions. It really is it's a guidepost to the way you're going to go forward. And like the delivering real solutions tells you the importance of your systems integration, your systems engineering, your framework strategy around software. It makes it very clear when you're going to differentiate yourself around your capabilities in order to achieve that objective. Now, I had a couple slides here, hopefully, that talk about our analyst meeting, when we talked to the analysts, and how did they react to this strategy. These companies, IDC and DataQuest, for those that you don't know, those are independent analysts. Those companies analyze competitors in the computer industry. They're usually quite critical. They've been very critical of digital because we've been kind of wandering around out there without a clear strategy. Now they're quite different, as you can see from these reports. Here's another one. Leadership, 18 months ahead. You'll notice in this one, he talks about, I still don't get the sense that digital knows what it has. Well, we really don't. We do a terrible job of actually explaining to ourselves and to our customers all of our capabilities. The complexity of the skills and the talents in digital, the software, the networking skills, is so broad and so rich in terms of functionality. We've had a hard time in marketing this, making good marketing messages. Right now, as a matter of fact, we're working on rationalizing all of our marketing investment, much like we did our engineering investment a year ago. And Ed Lucente is driving that piece. So we're going to try to make sure that we do a better job of marketing our products and services. We had this meeting, by the way, it was the first that I'm aware of in the company. I've been here 8 years. Last week was my 8th anniversary. First I'm aware of where the announcement was made, where we saved up a number of things. We had more than 200 products that were announced in support of that open client server computing strategy. And we made the announcement to our customers as opposed to the press. So we had something like 3,000 customers across the globe came in from our major accounts, and we explained, here is our strategy. Here's where digital is going. Here's all the products and services that we have today. Here's the products and services and enhancements that we're going to have in the next 6 to 9 months. And the customer reaction was very, very favorable. In fact, as a result of that work, we had about 3,000 unsolicited proposals that we were trying to crank through there to our customers to say, hey, let us have this opportunity to service your account. And we don't know yet how many of those we're going to win, but as I recall, the amount of money involved was nearly $500 million worth of potential business. We also had a quite favorable response to our announcements around Unix. You know, we've been investing more in Unix and the Unix operating system in the last year than any other software investment in the business. Digital was very skeptically perceived around Unix. This had to do with some very unfortunate remarks that were made by our previous chief executive, taken out of context, but nonetheless, it kept showing up over and over again in the press, and it convinced our customers that we had no intention of having a really competitive Unix. You can see from some of these quotes, this one from a consulting firm in the greater New England area, that we've turned that around. We're investing more in Unix, and today we have the most modern implementation of Unix in the world. It's the only 64-bit Unix. It has a microkernel architecture. It meets all of the System 5 standards, all of the Berkeley standards, and it is adding, within the next 6 months, we're adding symmetrical multiprocessing capability and many other commercial features that make our Unix leadership. It's been a very hard struggle, some excellent engineering that's being done there. Some additional quotes around Unix. How we're going to turn that around, you can see we haven't been taken seriously. My belief is that most of our opportunity for revenue growth the next couple of years is in the Unix operating system. We'll continue to service our existing VMS customers, obviously, and we'll win some new accounts with OpenVMS. But most customers today will be migrating to Unix. In 2 or 3 years from now, many customers, I believe, will also be going to Windows NT. But it takes time to develop that capability. I want to talk a little bit about the marketing direction in the company and some of the reorganization that we had recently. You know, and I mentioned that one of the first things I decided when I took on this responsibility is we needed to become customer-focused. And we looked at a large number of Woods meetings, different organizational structures to help us do that. And we settled on the idea of organizing digital, aligning digital's accounts by industry on a global basis. And we created a number of product business units, as you know, and we created some customer-focused business units. The customer-focused business units were industry-focused, like around finance, professional services, manufacturing and defense, healthcare, that sort of thing. And we look at all of our accounts on a worldwide basis sorted into those industries. This enables us to develop solutions for, say, the banking industry that we can use across the globe to the 80 or 90% level. On the other hand, when we tried to roll this particular implementation out, it was quite clear after some number of months of effort, it was too complex. There was too much internal bickering and too much confusion, frankly, for our sales professionals on the accounts. They're getting direction from too many bosses and also getting asked for a lot of data from different sources and spending all their time on internal focus instead of calling on customers. So fundamentally, recognizing that, senior leadership team and I, we debated that for about a week, decided we need to make a change in that organization, and I also needed something that was more manageable for me. What we did was combine the 5 CBUs, the customer-focused business units, into the worldwide sales and marketing organization under Ed Lucente. We are going to preserve that industry mapping, sales training by industry, aligning our customers by industry, but it also then lets me look at our business, as you see on the slide that's on the screen here, in terms of kind of 6 broad categories, 6 broad business units. The first is core products, It's managed by Ed Lucente, as I mentioned. It's sort of our traditional digital business with the five CBUs, and as you can see from the slides, about 40% of our revenue. Then you see that we have personal computers run by Enrico Pesatori. Okay, personal computers growing very rapidly, and you can see that this year that should be about 10% of the total revenue. Another business unit that's like personal computers in that it's a almost standalone business unit is the storage business unit, which is run by Charlie Crist. That's a real success story. Charlie and his management team took a storage business that was not competitive, that was losing money, and turned it around so it has the opportunity to grow rapidly and be profitable. That's about 9% of the business. Components and Peripherals by Larry Cabernetti. Larry has the distinction of being, in the first quarter just ended, the only business unit manager that made both his revenue and his profit goals. We have four business units made their profit goals, but only Larry made both revenue and profit in a really weak quarter. And so that's quite good results for Larry. And his business, again, 9%. And you can see as I'm talking about it, I can know what their goal is, what the revenue is, what the contribution margin is by those business units, and I know whether these leaders are achieving their goals or missing their goals. Very clear accountability and responsibility. Prior to this, a year ago, you didn't know anything about digital as to where we were making money or losing money. We had no way to get the data. Today, we're organized in a rather manageable six pieces of the business. In terms of digital consulting, that's a growing business for digital. It's profitable. It's led by Gresh Breebog. Digital consulting is approaching 14% of the business in total, and as I say, is profitable. The largest piece, other than the core products piece, is multi-vendor customer services. Digital does business in 100 countries. We service not only our own equipment, but the equipment and the operating systems and software of our competitors. This is a business that provides most of the profit in the company today. And the challenge for us is to preserve that profit while we bring these other businesses into a profitable position, even though there's tremendous pressure on multi-vendor customer services. So it's a very interesting portfolio, if you will, of skills and talents. Another thing that I'd mention to you is you look at this list, these are mostly new names. Mostly new names, people that were from within digital that were promoted, or people that were brought in from the outside. Because one of the things that I committed last year, I'm very clear about these commitments, by the way. I don't make them capriciously. So I think about what I'm going to do, and then we do it. That's something that we don't have a history of in the company over time. And I spoke to the shareholders of our company. I went back and said, these are the things I promised last year, and here's what we did. And in every case, we did what we said we'd do. One of the things I promised last year is I was going to bring new talent into digital at all levels, but particularly at the senior management levels. My view was is that the company had become too insular. That is, most of the management in this company was from New England, had all the same history and background. Most had only worked at digital, no different experience. And you need a balance in things. It's not that there's anything bad about that. It's just that you shouldn't have all one type of anything. You want a balance. You want people in the organization at the top that have experience in international affairs, people that have experience working in other companies, other ways of doing things, so that the debates and the discussions about how to grow the business are much richer. And so I committed to go out and hiring some new people, and you can see that we've hired quite a few. Now, coming back to this notes file, I look in the notes file from time to time. I see that there's a concern that we're hiring too many people from IBM. And so I thought I'd talk to you about that this morning. There's a perception, for whatever reason, that we're hiring a lot of people from IBM. The facts are quite different. In the year that I've been running the business, we've been adding the talent, fewer than 25% of the people that we've hired have ever worked for the IBM company. It's kind of funny. Somebody talked to me about a recent hire that I had actually brought in from his own business, and they said, I see you hired another person from IBM. This person hadn't worked for IBM in 13 years. You know, so I thought that was an amusing perspective. If you look at people that came to our company from the IBM company within the last, say they worked at IBM within the last 2 or 3 years, the number is less than 1 out of 5, so 18%. Now, personally, I think there's good talent at the IBM company, good talent at Hewlett-Packard, good talent at Digital Equipment, Sun Microsystems. All of the competitors have good talent. They also have some mediocre talent. The objective for us is to go after the best talent from a variety of different companies, bring that talent into digital so that we have a much more diversified management. Now, as we go forward, of course, we have our own culture. And it's quite important to me that we maintain our culture at the same time learning some things from other cultures, from other companies. We have to help the newcomers to our company, regardless of where they came from. I myself came here 8 years ago. It was very hard to stick in digital. It's a very different culture. It infects you, though, and after a while, you just love it. I'm very pleased that I stayed, obviously. We need to help these newcomers understand how we do things at digital somewhat differently than they may be used to. But at the same time, we need to listen to newcomers about a different way of possibly doing things. In many cases, we need to improve discipline, accountability, things of that nature. On the other hand, we don't want to lose our entrepreneurial spirit, our empowerment, the opportunity for individuals to make a difference without waiting for management to tell them to do so. So there's a lot of advantages in our culture, and we intend to keep those. Now, we've been talking about all of the things we've done in the last year. I want to talk about going forward. We want to focus on growing our business. We need to grow the revenue. As I mentioned, we introduced the Alpha AXP product line. In the first quarter, 20% of our system sales were in the new architecture, the new Alpha AXP. We need to increase that business. We're working hard to do that. You'll see some responses from a customer survey where we see what do the customers say about the Alpha AXP systems. It's a remarkably high 73% were highly satisfied, and 98% would recommend Alpha AXP to other customers. This is a remarkable accomplishment since we actually have been shipping the products only a year and only in the last few months with Unix. This shows the performance increase that one of the customers achieved, saying, well, it used to take 6 hours, take 6 minutes. I was talking to a customer that does pharmaceutical drug designs. They were saying that every day they could shorten the development of a new drug, which is a quite complicated process, was worth about $1 million in revenue. They had a product like that where it used to take hours and hours and hours. They can shorten that. They can shorten from a two-week process to a few-day process. Really, the price of the product is not the issue. The value that that delivers to their business, not to mention the fact that new drugs can get to market sooner to help save lives. This is a very important thing, and we're providing that to our customers. And you can see that the customers are very pleased. It's my intention that we will continue to invest in our Alpha AXP architecture, and I'm very confident that we can stay in leadership position vis-a-vis the competition. For example, you read a lot about this PowerPC and maybe PA RISC architecture and this and that. PowerPC is an architecture, the RISC architecture, developed by the IBM company. It's a quite old architecture, are implemented in modern technology, semiconductor technology. They just introduced their first chips in September of this year. We had been shipping Alpha AXP for more than 18 months. Consequently, in semiconductor technology, what that means is your yields are much higher and your costs are lower. The stuff we shipped 18 months before has higher performance than the stuff they're shipping in September. Now, just in October, we introduced a whole new generation of high-performance integrated circuits, 225 megahertz circuits, and now a 275 megahertz circuit that we'll be shipping next year, next calendar year. If you look at that, Digital was the first company to get an integrated circuit to operate a CPU chip at 100 megahertz, the first at 150, the first at 200, the first at 225, and today in Hudson, Massachusetts, we have integrated circuits running at 300 megahertz. Our competition is still struggling to get to 100 megahertz. So I'm very confident about our semiconductor technology and our ability in our systems engineering group to use that semiconductor technology to design balanced systems. So silicon technology is an enabler, and the other expertise you have to have is how do you design a balanced system so that there's a balance between the memory, the I/O, the graphics, the CPU, and we have excellent engineering for doing that. And so from my point of view, it's quite clear we have the opportunity, nothing's guaranteed in life, but we have the opportunity to remain the price performance leader in the marketplace, and that's what we're shooting to do. You also know that very recently Windows NT started shipping from Microsoft on Alpha AXP, and we expect that to begin to take off in the next calendar year, although I personally think it'll be a couple of years before that becomes a big revenue enhancer. Another accomplishment we had was interesting in the paper. The analysts were surprised that Digital, being a player in the space, was in video on demand. This is the new technology that will enable computing, media, voice and data to all come together over fiber optic cable to the home or to the consumer. And there are a number of tests being carried out in various places, mostly in the United States. Digital just recently won a contract with US West to build a demonstration of that capability. We're very well qualified for it because we have core technology capability in storage, which is very flexible, and video on demand requires storage, and high-performance CPUs for compression and decompression, in networking technology so you can make this stuff actually get to where it's going. And it's a fantastic thing. It builds on all of our capabilities, and it is the way the national information infrastructure in the U.S. or the way that the European nervous system is going to develop. Digital has the technology to be a player in that. That's the future. That's the future of computing and telecomputing, and we're going to be a leader in that space. Our research and development investments are confined now to two things, really: wireless and mobile communications and computing. So wireless computing, and in terms of media. Those are our advanced development activities. And then the engineering takes advantage of that advanced development to turn that into products and services for our customers. Now, in terms of going forward as an enterprise, I want to wrap up, as I frequently do in these DVNs, by talking about our value system. The value system of the company is the most important thing around what defines the company. And Digital has a unique and proud value system. We talk about these values quite a bit, and we discuss this at the senior leadership team. And I think for some of our newcomers, they really wonder if I was that serious. We took a whole day to talk about values. Then we had another Woods meeting, took a half day, talk about it again. It must seem very strange to people coming into Digital, because I can assure you, having worked at four companies, most companies don't spend a lot of time on these things. Like, they'll publish them somewhere, put on the bulletin board, and ignore it. That's not our style. See, we want to talk about these things amongst yourselves, with your managers, make sure we all understand what they mean. In the Digital Today magazine, you know that we publish in the November 1st issue, we published those with a little bit of exposition around each value. And what does that mean to us? How important is that? I want you to know that it's extremely important to me. It'd be a good idea for the people that report to me to take me very seriously on this matter. It turns out that around integrity, respect for the individual, excellence, accountability, teamwork, you know, nobody knows enough to do it all by himself or herself. We have to work together to do something. It'd be a good idea if we stopped competing with each other internally and worked on competing with our external competition. Innovation, which is what we've been about for decades, and dedication to our customer success through the technology and services that we bring. So we have real value to our customers. These values we're going to talk about probably every DVM, and the issue for it is not only talking about it, but the responsibility for this chief executive and the people that report to me is we have to exemplify these values in our behavior. And when we don't, then it's up to the employees, you out there looking at us, working with us, to call it to our attention that you think the behavior is not consistent and you want to talk about it. Because only in that manner are we going to be quite sure that we mean what we say around these values. Now, many times you can't see your own behavior objectively. And so it's quite possible that a leader, a manager of some level, an individual, might behave in a way that was not consistent with these values. Just didn't mean to, but made a slip. We're human, you know, we make mistakes. When that happens, you're doing people a favor by calling it to their attention so they can correct their behavior. And that includes the CEO or anyone else on the management team. So we're going to talk about that. Shortly, we will have also a code of conduct. We're trying to work on a code of conduct to make sure that, consistent with those values, we have some very clear rules of engagement. Like, we don't take bribes, we don't pay bribes. But in a lot of places in the world, business practices are not like they might be in the United States or whatever. We have to have a consistent core set of conduct, and we will have that. Make sure that that's clear. Because we're not into anything illegal or unethical. That's not consistent with our value system. So no matter where we do business in an ethical fashion. I'd rather lose the business easily than be even skirting something that's unethical or illegal. Now, the other thing for me, as I see going forward, is that we have everything we need to be successful. We have all of the talent in this company that any company has a right to have. We have the technology, as I've talked about. We have the leadership technology. We have customers that want us to be successful. We just need to have the will to win here. We have to compete. One of the problems in the company, I noticed when I first came in this company, is we had been successful for too long. It had been too easy too long. The proprietary computer companies, of which Digital was one of the leaders, could always make the quarter by just raising your prices a little bit on software, raise your prices a little bit on service. Those days are over. We have to compete. And competing is not uncomfortable. It just means, boy, you have to deliver real value to the customer, and you have to be able to explain to the customer what that value is, and you have to charge for it. But fundamentally, if you have the objective and the will to win, I'm quite confident that we will win, we will compete, and we will regain profitability on a sustainable basis, and we will regain leadership in at least the areas of computing that we have chosen to identify as our strategic objective. So to wrap this speaking part up, I'd like to just go back over again some of the highlights of the things that were accomplished in the last 12 months by all of your hard work. We improved our operating results. We were able to get ourselves more focused in terms of what we're doing in our engineering structure. We developed a customer-focused organization, rationalized those engineering products and investments. We're working on doing that, as I mentioned, in marketing. We're going to take a couple hundred million dollars out of marketing this year and get more for what we're spending as well. We set our focus so that we know what we're trying to accomplish in terms of open client server computing that delivers customer solutions. Recruited new senior talent in our company. We established an office of ethics. We spent a lot of time on our value system and making sure that we understand those values. What we need to focus on right now is Q2 revenue. We need every employee in the company focusing on getting revenue in quarter two. The issues around for the sales and marketing forces, to look at those opportunities that can turn revenue in a relatively quick time. Things like add-on storage, workstation sales, product sales, things that can give us some revenue in Q2, because we'd very much like to get back into the black, and we're very close. We're very close. In fact, in Q1, if we'd done about 6% more, we would have been in the black, just 6%. We didn't have to do much more. So I'm relatively optimistic. If we get focused, if we don't have a lot of diversions, we're not going to have a lot of new adventures and reorganizations and whatever in the quarter, so that people can focus on selling, then we should be able to return to profitability. That's our objective. Now, I look forward to answering any questions that you might have. I hope you won't be bashful. Ask a question about anything that I said or anything that you'd like clarification on or something that you're worried about that I didn't say. I'd be happy to talk to you about that.
Yesterday, during your talk to Geneva employees, you hinted that Digital's order administration left a lot to be desired. Mm-hmm. You also expressed that you strongly believe that our salesmen and women need to be accountable for the amount of revenue they bring in. Mm-hmm. How much are you willing to invest of the corporation's money to simplify the order processing systems?
That's a very good question, a lot. Because what happened is that we took a customer survey, and we've started now doing independent customer surveys to find out in a quantitative way what our customers think about our products and services and what we're doing well on and what we're not doing so well on. I reviewed the first customer survey data with the senior leadership people about a week ago, I think, maybe 2 weeks. A week ago, I think. And one of the worst marks we got from our customers overall was our order admin, lack of responsiveness, confusion, can't match the invoices to the stuff that was delivered. You have customers that want to pay us, but they don't have an invoice that they can recognize as what they actually ordered and took delivery on. So that's crazy. By the way, that's also the biggest problem that Hewlett-Packard has. I talked to Lou Platt, who's the CEO of HP. This is the same kind of problem they have. Most of these systems grew up kind of as the company was growing very rapidly. They're all different in the different territories, not well coordinated. We need to re-engineer the whole thing. And as you know, we have a process going on to re-engineer our entire customer value chain. It's called a CVC, Customer Value Chain Re-engineering. One of the first areas of focus is on this whole order admin order entry. I was talking to Ed Lucente last week. He did the first of the territory reviews. He's going to make a videotape, as I understand it, in the next few days to discuss with the territory people how those territory reviews came out and what the areas of focus are. But one of the areas of focus, only five areas of focus that he's worried about in the near term. One of those areas of focus is the whole customer value chain, order admin, administrative kinds of processes that needs attention. The other is alludes to another thing you mentioned about the sales force. That is, we have to invest more in training our sales professionals on our products and services. You know, the product cycles are so short, the things are quite complex. Salesforce has got to understand, at least to a reasonable level, what are the products and services that we have to sell. And we need to help salespeople get that good training. So a lot of emphasis will be on training the Salesforce, fixing the admin systems, fixing the quality of the products, the reliability of delivery of the products. This is a big deal. It's a very big deal. And we can't do everything. So we're going to try to focus on a handful of things that make the most difference. Yes.
Albert Ohio, an account manager for State of Geneva. 1 year ago, you told us you're going to put an organization that will last at least 2 years. Mm-hmm. Will you meet this objective?
Yes. In fact, what we'd like to do is have an organization that lasts longer than that with some stability. But as I said last night, it's not ever going to be a situation where there aren't changes and improvements. For instance, when we made the customer-focused business units and set up all the business units, as I mentioned, we were quite clear that's what we wanted to accomplish, to align our accounts by industry. But the way we tried to implement it didn't work. Now, it's intelligent for management to recognize when something isn't working and to make a change. In particular, though, I'm quite concerned that as far as our account executives are concerned, that we have stability with the account executives, that is, the sales executives that manage our accounts on a worldwide basis. My opinion, and talking to Ed Lucente, his opinion, is that we need to keep those people stable for a minimum of 3 years. So they have some opportunity to learn the account, to know, you know, what the opportunities are for digital products and services in those accounts. You need to know the customer. And so we want to stabilize that. And also to your question about investment, we're going to be adding resources here in Europe, for example. Ed plans to add between 10% and 30% to the direct sales force in the various territories in Europe. Now, we're going to be taking some of the infrastructure out, and we're going to be taking some of the management structure today and giving them the opportunity to move into the field. But we need more coverage on the small and medium scale enterprises throughout the globe for digital, and we need to develop more indirect channels. And so there's going to be a lot of change of that nature, and you can't avoid it. That's part of managing the business. You don't just wait for the revenue to come in. You've got to react. The industry's changing. We have to change. So we're going to focus on developing indirect channels, more coverage on the street for our small and medium enterprises, less infrastructure, move more of the decision-making into the territories closer to the customer. So you'll just see this as a fundamental trend in the company, to distribute decision-making, distribute accountability closer to the customer, less in the headquarters operations of these decisions being made, and a different philosophy around headquarters operations, whether it's this headquarters or the headquarters in Maynard or in the Asia-Pacific area. The headquarters operations need to be there to add value to the sales force. Add value. The headquarters operations are there to support the sales force, as my headquarters is there to help our sales force be more productive, not the other way around. And I talked about this last night. I hope that everybody understands that message. The message of all of the executives to our employees should be that management, people like myself, and people who report to me and report to them, our responsibility is to make sure we create an environment where our sales professionals can be more successful than the competition. We need to add value to them because ultimately the customers are the ones with the money. We need to make sure that we are the best provider of products and services to those customers. All the rest of us are here to make sure that happens. Whether you're in engineering creating the products and services, you're in manufacturing building them, you're in logistics delivering them, or you're in one of the support functions that makes it possible to collect for it. You know, whatever it is, our job function is to support those sales professionals. It's a very different attitude than used to be in this company, and it's going to take more than 5 minutes for people to come fully understand it and believe it, because it takes a long time to change a culture. But you're going to hear me boringly consistent on this subject. Other questions? Yes.
Joanne Freeman, Development and Learning. Mm-hmm. Bob, we've spoken a lot about sales, engineering, admin support. What about the groups that are employee-focused, such as HR mm-hmm. and development and learning? Could you speak to us about that?
Yes. I think that, frankly, the support functions are every bit as critical as the other functions. In my view, a business, an enterprise, is like a living organism. Everything's important. You say, well, what's more important, the brain or the heart? You don't do well without either. You know, it's good if you have a nice, healthy both. In fact, all of the various parts of an organism are there for some purpose. The organism doesn't do well if you excise a critical organ. So whether it's the law department, finance, human resources, marketing, whatever it is, every piece of the business is a professional thing. It needs to be optimized so that the enterprise, the organism as a whole, can be more efficient than the competition. Now, in a change period like we're going through, in the computer industry, all of the business models are turned completely upside down. Companies like Digital and IBM are having to wrestle with a business model that doesn't work. The old business model does not work. We had to go to a new business model, which is quite different, and it results in tremendous turmoil and stress within the organism. So employees are upset. You know, people are being let go. In the last year, as you know, we had more than 15,000 people leave the company. In the last 15 months, 21,000 people. That's painful. There was a good metaphor made to describe this activity. It's like, again, thinking about an organism, it's like going to the hospital for surgery. So like you're a patient, you try to avoid surgery, but if you're sick and over time and you have to go, then you go and you have the surgery. But very few patients of surgery immediately feel better. I mean, usually right after surgery, you feel worse. When an organization is going through downsizing and restructuring, you don't typically feel better, just like you don't feel better when you have surgery. You feel worse for a while. But if the surgery is successful, you recover, become healthy again. If it's not successful, you die. What's happening in our business is that many companies are dying in the computer industry. There are companies that are going out of business. There are some in Europe that will go out of business, probably would already be out of business if they weren't subsidized. There are some in other countries that are being subsidized, but they are not competitive. So the alternatives are, you got to have the surgery, but you have to expect you're going to feel badly after. Now, the issue about HR is HR has the unique responsibility to help with that healing process. We all share that in management, individuals. We have to help each other get through this piece. And for me personally, the therapy that works best for me is to look to the forward, not to the past. Look ahead with optimism, determination, do something. Don't sit there and wring your hands. You know, sitting there and wringing your hands and feeling bad is not productive. You know, it doesn't improve anything. It doesn't help you get moving. It turns out in some societies, some companies, the employees are waiting for the management to have the divine light or something to get them going again. Don't do that. Take responsibility for your own behavior, whatever function you're in, whether it's HR, finance, or whatever. Look for opportunities to make a positive difference. Don't wait to be asked. Just start helping. If you start helping each other, then the enterprise will grow, and we won't have to spend so much time on this restructuring and downsizing. In the absence of that, we will have to spend more time on it. It's a business, you know, and we intend to survive. Other questions? Yes.
Bob, we have a very complex and broad product set in digital. Do you believe it's now possible for a sales executive to handle all that, or do we have to look more towards specialized sales and marketing mm-hmm. teams in terms of things like workstations, networking, mm-hmm. and software?
I think that that's the right approach. The one that you mentioned is that you need specialized teams, because no matter how bright you are, even the brightest person in the company cannot possibly cover all of the software, all of the hardware, all of the networking, all of the many things that we offer in systems engineering, systems integration. I mean, you just can't get your mind around it. So the objective is to train the sales professional so that the sales team knows where those specialists are and knows how to get those specialists to come deliver products and services to the customers. But this is also a methodology that has to be re-engineered, and we call that the customer engagement process. We've got a number of people in digital, different functions and different disciplines in the company, working on how is that architecture going to work so that we can be more effective than the competition. So that the sales professionals know where they can go to get those kind of resources and support. And then you can have people, as a matter of fact, in my Australia example, one reason that we're doing so well in Australia around workstations is the country manager there made sure that he had a team of people that were very, very well trained around workstations. And they would go very targeted at workstation accounts and customers and opportunities, and they just knew more than the competition, and they won the sale. You know, because they had that breadth and depth
around one thing, in this case workstations. So we need specialists by industry, specialists by application, specialists by hardware, whether it's networking, workstations, or whatever. And that's what we're putting in place. We're also putting in place more detailed training for our professionals that are the specialists and certification. You've got to get certified. One of my concerns around particularly our consulting business is that in the past, we didn't always send people to the customer that really knew how to deliver those consulting services, real value added. So I'm quite clear on this. Gresh Breebach, one of his major objectives is to ensure that we have uniform training across the world and that we have certified specialists that are competent to go in and represent digital in those accounts.
Please flip his cassette over, rewind to the beginning of side B.